Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations.
It's the Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold. The Early Morning Late Show. Get your day started.
Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour, and probably everybody knows what today's date is. Today is July. Get back to work. The fun is over. We hope you had a great 4th of July celebration. I know I did, and once again, Joey Chestnut is the undisputed hot dog eating champion. He scarfed down 72 hot dogs and buns to win the Nathan's annual hot dog eating contest for the 10th time in New York. And I was talking to Paul Perreault this morning. He said he had 3 brats yesterday. What a loser. Sorry, Paul. And here's another clever guy in Michigan. He thought it would be a good idea to use fireworks to get bees out of his garage. He thought the smoke would get the bees out. But the rockets instead blasted and burned down his garage. So there you go. Sorry. All right, I've got a great morning plan. I've got Dr. Russ Berg in studio with me, so I'm not going to waste a lot of time. We're going to talk about marriages, and is divorce your best and only option? And there is always more hope for saving your marriage than you are aware of. Now, before you make that irrevocable decision, well, you're going to want to listen to Russ, who's in studio. We'll take a short break and be right back. Happy Wednesday, even though it feels like a Monday. Good morning. It's 7 minutes after the hour. Thanks for being with us this morning. I hope you had a great day yesterday. And I just, I keep thinking every day is just another day that we can thank our King for the blessings he's given to this imperfect nation. And yesterday was a good day to do that. I have in studio with me Dr. Russ Berg. And Russ has been a pastor for over 36 years. And now he's the director of pastoral training and church development at Hope for the Hurting Home. And Hope for the Hurting Home is going to help you improve your marriage or reduce your chance of getting divorced or repair a troubled marriage. Russ, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. This is great.
Oh, thanks. Now, let's talk about some of the things we can do when we're in a situation where we have either we're in trouble with our marriage or we know people in our church or our community that are in trouble in our circle of influence. You talk about first responders.
Yeah. Well, I think everyone knows someone that's got a hurting marriage. And one of the things that Hope for the Hurting Home does is we have a training that helps churches train marital first responders to work with that person who comes to you one-on-one and says, I'm just really struggling. And so marital friends first responders helps you answer this question. How can I be a friend to my friend's hurting marriage? Not necessarily affirm their view of the marriage, but how can I encourage them to stay healthy themselves and to trust God and to wait and to seek to wait for the something to happen in terms of their spouse, but also for them to seek the help that they need before it's too late. Oftentimes, part of the thing that drives our marriages into crisis is we wait too long.
So when you talk about first responders, you had a great little metaphor of having a hospital with, you know, people bleeding in the parking lot and no one to go out and help them from their car into the hospital.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's awkward to talk. You know, I mentioned everybody has that friend that's got a struggling marriage. I think part of it is just finding the courage in ourselves to say, even though my own marriage may not be perfect, I might be the very person that God will use to just get the attention of my friend to say, it's too early to give up. I really need to see where God could show up in this. I really need to get the help that I need before I make an irrevocable decision and give up on my marriage.
Mm-hmm. But what if you've had it, you're just done?
Well, we've been married 42 years. Mel would say it's the 30 happiest years of our life. And we know what it's like to hit that wall earlier in our marriage and feel like we were done. And if it wasn't for a church and some Christian counseling that really intervened on our behalf and opened our eyes, not only that our struggles are very, very common, but also that there was really good professional Christian help that we could get. Our marriage wouldn't have been saved. We wouldn't have had the 5 grandkids we did. We wouldn't have had, you know, the opportunity. I think that it's really important for couples who are struggling and feeling like I'm at the wall to recognize a couple things. One, God wants to use the pain that you're in to help teach you something about himself. Whether or not your marriage survives, if you're at that crisis point, God still cares about you. He still wants to work in your life. And getting hope, getting help and getting hope is not primarily about fixing your marriage. It's primarily about getting you in the place where God can use you and your spouse in the healing process. And so I would encourage couples that are really, really struggling at this point, number one, don't give up. Don't give up. God's not done with you, and there's much more hope available around you than you think. But then secondly, I would just encourage people in hurting marriages this morning to remember your primary identity is not your marital status. Your primary identity is that God loves you and God cares about you. And that he will be the source of your hope and your help as you're trying to see whether or not your marriage can go back together.
What if you're saying things like, he or she just is not listening to me anymore, not meeting my needs. The person is so selfish and self-absorbed.
Yeah. I hear that a lot. Melody heard that a lot.
About you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's some honesty.
Yeah. Well, you know, a couple things. When we're in pain, we generally write a narrative in our head that either makes us feel better or justifies our desire or our sense that the marriage is over.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not to say there are some really, really challenging issues in marriage. Sometimes there's mental health issues. Sometimes there are hard things that have over a long period of time have developed. But mostly what we find is that most marital problems have really good solutions if people are willing to push the pause button and get help and partner with God to work hard, do a full court press on their marriage issues before they pull the ripcord, before they give up.
Mm-hmm. And what about when there's major issues like infidelity?
Those are what we call hard reasons for divorce.
Okay.
We talk about hard and soft reasons. Hard reasons almost all begin with a letter A, adultery, abuse, abandonment, addictions. Those are not immediate reasons for divorce, but those are signals and flags that someone is going to need additional help outside of marriage counseling so that an addiction or an affair that needs to end is not undermining a person's best effort to try to save their marriage.
Mm-hmm. So what about faith-based discernment counseling? That's an expression you brought up earlier today, and I'd like to hear more about that.
Sure. Faith-based discernment counseling is an approach that was originally developed at the University of Minnesota through Dr. Bill Doherty and then through a partnership through our founder, Dr. George Kenworthy, is a set of dialogues with a conflicted couple to help them answer one question. Is divorce your best and your only option? And it's an impartial, loving, respectful conversation that helps a couple figure out and maybe for the first time hear from each other, how did we get here? What have we tried to solve some of these issues? What role do our children play in our decision-making about the future of our marriage? And then we talk to them about the best times in their marriage. It's what's called in counseling psychology, it's what's called exceptionalism. Talk to us about the times that are an exception to what you're feeling right now. And that's important because remembering that there were times when you were connected, when you did get along, when you weren't fighting constantly, a body of research shows that it's really important when people get reconnected with those positive memories. It may give them the little bit of hope they need to go back to counseling or to begin counseling to see if there's hope to save their marriage.
Hmm.
And saving a marriage really depends on both spouses signing up for significant change.
So it's both people have to say, yes, I want to move this thing forward and try to avoid divorce.
In your question before, Bill, for divorce intervention, It's not about saving their marriage at this point. It's about answering the question, am I willing to even explore if there's hope to save the marriage?
There you go.
So it's not a decision to stay married forever. It's a decision for a limited period of time to do a full court press to see if there's hope.
That's an interesting way of putting it. I really like that. Now, if you have a question for Dr. Russ Berg and you have something you would like addressed, give us a call, 1-877-933-2484. I know it's early, but I'll give you that number again, 1-877-933-2484. Give us a call or you can email me, bill@myfaithradio.com, and I can put your question on the air to Dr. Berg. Be back in just a minute. Good morning. It's 17 minutes after the hour. I have Dr. Russ Berg in studio. How nice is that for me? Everybody loves in-studio guests, especially when we're talking about ways in which we can make marriages work and keep people together and give them hope. Russ, what is it like when there's a mixed agenda where one person in the couple wants out and one person wants to stay in and fight?
Yeah, that's probably the most common scenario, you know, that we see. And when they come to us, for, you know, first of all, usually one person calls for help or one person contacts us. We try to, first of all, just reassure them that both people in the marriage are important to God and important to us. And so then our goal is to try to get both the husband and wife sitting in front of us, realizing that both of them have different levels of hope, different levels of motivation to try to save the marriage. But initially, we will lead them through three sets of discussions in order to help them answer this question. Is divorce your best and your only option? And so we want to put, especially the leaning out spouse, the person who's got the least amount of hope, we want them to understand that we care about them and that they're going to get an opportunity through their own voice without being interrupted. Whether, and this is not about right or wrong, this is about being heard. And so we create a safe opportunity for both spouses to tell the narrative and their story. We oftentimes use a visual couple map and let them actually use little, you know, little markers to kind of explain the journey of how did we get here. Then secondly, we'll put another layer in the conversation. And this is one at a time. So we don't let couples interrupt each other. We really respectfully give each person, whether you're leaning in or leaning out, the opportunity to say, how did I get here? Second, what have you tried to do in order to address this? Have you gone to counseling? Have you watched reruns of Oprah? Have you, you know, what have you done? Personally, you've read a book. You've gone to a seminar, or maybe you went to counseling. We want to evaluate that because counseling experiences are very different for spouses depending on their perspective. And what we want to do is just help them understand. If you didn't go to get any help, our thing is not to say, well, you know, gosh, can't you just care enough about your marriage to go get counseling? We go in a totally different direction to say, we can't believe how hard it must have been for you to have gone through all these years without getting the help that you need. And then we talk about children. We want people to walk through when you're facing an irrevocable decision, when you're facing a decision about ending your marriage, we want you to walk through a neighborhood with all kinds of signs that say children at play. Because children have a huge stake in a decision that they don't get to weigh in on. And so we, in a very non-judgmental, non-condemning way, we just ask you to own this question. What role do your children play in your decision-making about the future of your marriage? And spouses are going to have a different perspective, but we want them to hear it. Then we'll help them talk about the best times in their marriage. And it might be, you know, the leaning out person is going to minimize this, and we get this. The leaning in spouse is going to say, oh, it's been great, it's been great, it's been worth it. That still needs to come out. What we want to try to do is reconnect them with the fact that at one point they weren't in the same amount of pain that they are today. And then we want to give them three options. You can stay the same, hope something changes, you can move towards separation and divorce, or you could push the pause button and for a limited period of time with the best help available, try a full court press to see if there's hope to save your marriage.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's going to be relief, I would imagine, if you get in community with other couples who yeah. might be healthy and or struggling a little, just so you can get yourself back into the mainstream.
Yep.
I think sometimes when you remain isolated and all you do is stay home and yell at each other, you're going to feel like it's you against
yeah,
the world.
It's very true. And especially, you know, especially if you're in a faith community, you're in a church, and going through marital struggle in a lot of our evangelical churches, whether it's true or not, we don't feel safe to be broken people in the midst of everyone else who looks like they have it together. And so really great churches try to create this environment. It's one of the things we try to help churches do, create an environment where it's okay to raise your hand and go, hey, I'm struggling. But what often happens is that one of you then stops coming to church. You get separated from the community bill mm-hmm. you just talked about, and now it's easy for the enemy to keep telling you this lie. Your marriage is falling apart. You're the only ones that are going through this, and it becomes very victim-oriented, mm-hmm. very me-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
And just being next to other normal, quote-unquote, couples, there are no normal couples, but, you know, those of us who've been through some really hard times and who are continuing to struggle, but just continuing to trust the Lord, you know, two steps forward, one step back. You're right. You brought up a really important point about journeying together in the company of healthy, broken people mm-hmm. is one of the best things that can happen for our marriages.
Mm-hmm. Russ, talk a little bit about hopeforthehurtinghome.com, which is your website, and what a church or people might want to do to become first responders, and how you can offer training and hope for churches that may not have
sure.
this available.
Yeah. Well, first of all, Hope, if you want to know about the organization, hopeforthehurtinghome.com will give you a lot of that information. We also have a church-based clinic in Dallas that does counseling with couples, either that have little resources or just are kind of isolated anywhere in the world. You have the internet. We've got really good faith-based counseling available. One of the trainings we have available for churches or organizations, so we've trained clergy, we've trained military chaplains, base chaplains, and deployment chaplains. We've gone into some legal practices and trained some of the family law attorneys.
You haven't trained radio hosts, so I feel worthless right now.
Oh, man. We'd be happy to come in and do a training.
That'd be great.
Yeah. Well, first training is it's for the individual. I'm not going to be a counselor. How can I be a friend to my friend's hurting marriage?
I really like that.
And that's
first responder
that's for
idea.
Everyone awesome. In the church. It's for everyone in the church.
Yeah.
And then the second one are for people, church staff, counselors, therapists, family law attorneys, people in HR. You know, some of the people who do the best job at this are people who are already comfortable with helping people work through conflict resolution, and they can be trained to be great first responders. And this is the discernment training is for people who want to work directly with the couple to help them answer this one question and hopefully prepare them for a good referral with a 6-month commitment to work hard on their marriage with the best help available before they give up.
Real quick, we only have about a minute left, Russ, but there's a caller said, if one of the partners wants in, how do you tell the one who wants out that they are bringing hardship and a curse upon themselves?
My experience is that I need to get the person who's leaning in to stop pushing. Oftentimes, it feels right, you know, hey, I didn't have the affair. I didn't screw up. You're leaning out. You're going to bring all this stuff on yourself. I understand that. That's a very honest feeling. It is singularly unhelpful because in communicating that, I'm actually serving to push the leaning out spouse farther out, and I'm reinforcing all of the reasons they have inside that the marriage won't change or doesn't have hope. There are times, too, when people walk away from a marriage, and you and I have no control over that.
Mm-hmm.
That is just an incredibly hard heartbreak. And God still cares about you. You still need people to walk with you through that. But that's probably one of the most painful things. If you're really in a position where a spouse has been deceived, they've been caught in an addiction or in something, and they're just leaving the marriage, the only thing we can do is cry out to God. But it doesn't help to push.
Okay. All right, Russ, the website is hopeforthehurtinghome.com. And if you have personal questions about...
They can go to my website, russberg.org.
Russberg, B-E-R-G.org, russberg.org. And I've been speaking to Dr. Rusberg. And thank you so much for coming into the studio.
Oh, this has been awesome.
Really. It has been fun. And I would love to have you back because we've got more calls and we've got more things to talk about. And we just had very little time to cover all the bases. So we'll get you back. It's 27 minutes after the hour. We'll take a short break and
thank
be back.
You.
More coming up with Dr. Ken Kaiser.
It's morning. The good part, that's up to you. With a little help from Bill Arnold and the Early Morning Late Show on Faith Radio.
Good morning. It's half past, and we're all needing a little extra time and energy to get going today, don't we? After the celebrations last night. Hope you had a fun time. We'll take a little news break, and when we come back, Dr. Kent Kaiser is in studio. I'm two for two with in-studio guests today. I love it. Think of what you're saying. You can get it wrong and still. Good morning. 25 minutes until the top of the hour. You know, we all have busy lives, and it can consume us if we let it. Author and speaker Emily Freeman talks about this and what she did to cope with the busyness trap.
It's one thing to have busy schedules and full lives. I think that's kind of unavoidable, but it's an entirely another thing when the fast-moving world is not only moving around me, but within me. And I started to feel like, you know, I had written a couple of books. My kids were growing. They were starting to get involved in things. My husband has a nonprofit ministry of his own that he leads. And so I was just sort of in this kind of, I wasn't completely burned out, but I was on the road. And so that constant buzzing kind of, and sometimes it's what keeps us up at night, the things that we, you know, you lay down at night and instead of falling asleep, you start making mental to-do lists in your head. And I felt like that was starting to get out of hand for me. And so I know I have a lot left to learn, but one thing I know for sure is the language of the game, the pull to comparison, to competition, to building my life, and the feeling that the work I do is never quite enough. And so for me, I began to feel like that this is not the life that I see in Jesus. This is the life that I have made for myself. And so what might it look like to slow down and recognize the kingdom of God where I am rather than trying to move towards something?
If you want to hear that entire interview, go to our website, myfaithradio.com. And that speaker and author was Emily Freeman. And if you put in our new and improved search engine, Held Together by God, or Emily Freeman, you'll get right to it. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, Dr. Kent Kaiser's in studio. It's like Emily said, you don't want to get caught up comparing yourself to others, and I'm not going to sit here and compare myself to Kent, who is much smarter than me. Be back in a minute.
Many would like to minimize the relevance of Christianity in our history and our society, and I say we do so to our own peril. This is Jim Garlow. John Adams, author of the Declaration of Independence, wrote, "The general principles on which the fathers achieved independence were the general principles of Christianity. The United States was conceived with a thoroughly Christian foundation, and without the framework of these principles rooted in Christianity, woven together, working together, we cannot survive as a free society. Each time we eliminate God from the basis of even one of these principles, we weaken and ultimately destroy it, because the principle is rooted in a belief in God. And it will give way to a form of government that constricts and constricts and further constricts until it ultimately chokes out our freedoms, our personal liberties, and yes, our prosperity." There's more at jimgarlow.com.
And you know what that music means. I'll let you fill in your own blank. I have in studio Dr. Kent Kaiser. And he's a bagpipe player himself. And that was his teacher who wrote an original piece for his walk-on music. Kent, good morning.
Good morning.
Let's give your teacher credit again. What's his name?
His name is Mike Breidenbach. He's the director of piping at McAllister College here in St. Paul.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you pipe over the weekend, or did you?
I did not pipe over the weekend. I was out camping in the Boundary Waters over the weekend, so I gave my neighbors a little bit of a break. But
that's nice.
We'll be back at it today.
And you had an encounter with no-see-ums?
Yeah, a few. But yeah. Otherwise, the bugs were pretty good, and the fish were very, very plentiful. It's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Yep. Unbelievable.
Any shoreline meals, or aren't you allowed to do that?
6 out of the 9 meals were
shoreline
for fish. Yeah.
Nice.
So we gorged ourselves, really.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right, let's get back to the news at hand. And it looks like Justice Kennedy is hinting that he could be off the bench soon.
Yeah, this is interesting. Anytime there's a Supreme Court vacancy, of course, it's a big deal. And so Justice Kennedy is raising speculation because he hasn't hired his clerks for the 2018 session. Now, he has for this fall. This fall, he's hired his clerks, and so everybody believes that he will continue to be on the Supreme Court through next June. But by this time, he should have already been lining up his clerks for the next session, which would begin in October of 2018, but he hasn't. And so that raises speculation that maybe at the end of next term, he'll announce his retirement. Some people thought he was already going to do it this year, but he didn't, obviously. And that would be just a huge deal for the Trump administration because that comes before the 2018 midterm elections, which means that there would still be ostensibly a Republican Senate to confirm a Trump appointee.
Mm-hmm.
So we could get another appointee in the vein of Neil Gorsuch. Trump has promised that he would always appoint conservative justices to the Supreme Court, and he's already, and by the way, Trump is doing a great job of appointing conservatives to lower court levels too. So, mm-hmm. I mean, we got to give him a pat on the back for that. I mean, whatever we think of what else Trump might be doing, he is certainly doing a great job of putting conservatives on the courts in this country.
Kent, dream ahead for me a little bit. What would another appointee who's conservative mean for the courts?
Well, Justice Kennedy has been what we call the swing vote. Sometimes he ticks off the conservatives and sometimes he ticks off the liberals, is what that means. So he's the one who's written the opinion on gay marriage in this country. He's also been a swing vote on the issue of abortion. He's been also somebody who's been a swing vote on the issue of property rights, in which case, in those cases, he's come down on the conservative side. And he's also been come down on the conservative side on gun issues. So he's been kind of, all over the map, really, on the issues. He hasn't been a consistent conservative or consistent liberal, which is maddening to everyone, I'm sure. But if he were to retire, he'd certainly be replaced by somebody who would be more conservative and more reliably conservative. And that would be a huge deal for conservatives. At that point, then, the Chief Justice could take up a whole range of issues. Right now, I think that Chief Justice Roberts is really careful about which cases to take up because he doesn't want to set precedent with this swing vote in the middle there on some of the issues, you know, being a little bit unclear as where he's going to come down, Kennedy, that is. And I think if he had a conservative majority with five conservative justices, reliably conservative justices, then he'd be able to take up more landmark cases.
Mm-hmm. So that's actually something that would be kind of exciting.
It would be. All attention would be on the Supreme Court every time an issue came up, and they'd be considering some big issues. Right now, it seems like the cases they take up are sometimes smaller and they're decided on very narrow terms. Mm-hmm. But I think that we could see some more broad-based decisions if we would have a conservative majority.
Kent, what's the history of voting corruption between both parties?
Yeah, it's been an issue lately because President Trump set up this commission on voter integrity. And, you know, having worked in a Secretary of State's office, I'm very much familiar with what happens in terms of voter fraud and where the angles are, where the voter fraud can take place and so on. And nobody should be deluded into thinking that there isn't any voter fraud. Of course there is. There's, if you don't believe there's any voter fraud, then just, every time you go out to a parking lot at the mall, just leave your car unlocked.
Mm-hmm.
If you trust people that much. I mean, voting is a small thing for a lot of people. For a lot of people, it's like, easy to cheat.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do have voter fraud in this country, and there's not a lot of checks in the system to find it. And one of the biggest weaknesses is there are really no checks across state lines. Unless somebody's really suspected of doing something wrong, we don't have regular checks across state lines. So one of the places where I always saw it, and we'd hear about it when I was working at the Secretary of State's office, is where a student might live, say, in Minnesota, but go to school in Wisconsin and vote in both places. Vote absentee in Minnesota, vote in person in Wisconsin. Or I heard about that from a student in South Dakota who voted in both South Dakota and Minnesota. And that there's no way of rooting that out unless you suspect that the person has been voting illegally. And that's just one example. Now, there are others. You know, we saw one student now just recently who was charged with a crime in Virginia of registering dead people. And the only reason that this came up, the only reason it was rooted out, there was no systematic way of figuring it out. The way it was rooted out was that a county election official recognized the name of someone who was coming through on these voter registrations.
Wow.
Who she knew was dead.
Wow.
Because it was the father of a county attorney or something like that. So it often does turn out that voter fraud is found through those sorts of personal connections or personal knowledge. That's why we try so hard to recruit local people to be election judges or to be poll workers in this country, is because they ostensibly would know something about the people who are coming to the polling place. That's especially true in rural areas, not so much in urban areas. But those are just a couple of examples of the voter fraud that we've seen recently. And what happens oftentimes is that the ballots get cast, and then those people who are found out to have maybe voted in the wrong precinct or something, those cases are basically just dismissed, because after the fact, there's not much you can do about it. You can't go back and undo the vote because mm-hmm. there's no name attached to it. You can't undo the election. That's just not going to happen. And so voter fraud is, you know, usually swept under the rug in a sense by local officials, especially the county attorneys or whoever's supposed to prosecute it. And it's unfortunate, but it does take place. And I do give credit to the Trump administration for setting up this commission to try and figure out where the weaknesses in the system are.
Mm-hmm. And this student is going to jail for 100 days after he pleaded guilty to registering dead people.
Right. And hopefully this will be a warning to others who have probably done something similar.
Mm-hmm. Does it make you think of the recount with Franken and Norm Coleman?
Well, sure. I mean, and in that case, I think that there were things that took place after the election in the recount itself that shouldn't have taken place, that did swing the election for Franken, which should have gone to Coleman. Some of that was bungling on the part of the Republican attorneys themselves, who were supposed to be working on Coleman's behalf. And, you know, it really gets into the minutiae to point out where those things were. But there were just a couple of decisions that were made in that recount process that shouldn't have been. And I'm certain changed the outcome of the election.
Okay, Kent, when we return, why the media has broken down in the age of Donald J. Trump. We'll be back in just a minute. 13 minutes until the top of the hour. Thanks for being with us. Good morning. 10 minutes until the top of the hour. I have in studio Dr. Kent Kaiser, who looks both rested and fit. Kent, I don't think that outfit look that you have on looked as good on the store mannequin as it does on you.
Ha! I don't know what to say.
Doesn't matter. I think your little vacation, your little trip up north did good for you.
Got some sun, that's for sure.
Got you rested? Feel good?
True.
Let's talk about the media, how it has broken down in the age of our current president.
Well, it's interesting to look at how the media covered Trump and what they're doing today. You know, early when Trump announced his presidency, everybody kind of blew it off and thought, well, this isn't even serious.
Right.
But then the media started covering Trump because he was a spectacle, and were covering him because supposedly he wasn't serious. And so he was a diversion from the seriousness of the political campaign. But then next thing you know, he's getting more and more people to his rallies, and so the media are covering him because he's getting more people at his rallies, and so then he's getting tons of coverage. So one person estimated that, or that he would have had to pay $2 billion for the amount of coverage that he received during the campaign. I mean, obviously it was free coverage for him, so awesome. And we know that he spent far less than his opponent, Hillary Clinton, in that election on actual paid media. Why would he need to pay for it if he's getting $2 billion for free? You know, I wouldn't pay for it either. But now it's interesting because, of course, then the media, we know, are liberal. And so when if you're a media person, you come at this from the perspective that you think that Trump is a demagogue, that you think that he's racist, that you think that he's a bigot, and so on and so forth, all the things that liberals like to call conservatives. If you're one of those media people, then how do you cover him now? Well, I mean, it seems like they keep covering him the same way as they did in the campaign mode, where they're covering him as being illegitimate and a spectacle and so on. Meanwhile, he's getting stuff done. And, you know, so, I mean, the media just have lost all credibility now. They don't report from the perspective of non-bias, or they don't, they don't even cover the news from the perspective of real news anymore. It's just, you know, whatever's going to get attention. And obviously, I mean, it's so obvious that they have an agenda. It's become just ridiculous.
Let's talk about that guy that made that video of Donald Trump at WrestleMania slamming down CNN. So you're a private citizen. You make this little video. It's a little joke. And a conglomerate the size of CNN comes after you. And they force an apology, and they threaten you to expose you for what? For upsetting them? What's the deal?
Yeah, I don't even understand what, you know, CNN should have just kept its mouth shut. But, yeah, it's an interesting video because maybe people will remember that Donald Trump was involved with the WWE from time to time and, in fact, showed up for this one match where he participated a little bit in a little bit of a smackdown.
Right.
And that's what the guy took as the video, and instead of the real person's head, he put the CNN logo on the on the head, and that's the video. And what's interesting is that President Trump retweeted it. Like, you know, so that gave it legitimacy too. I think that's what probably made CNN mad, was like all of a sudden here you have the president getting in on it. But it's kind of funny because, I mean, the president has this long relationship with the WWE. It's a business located in Connecticut, and he's friends, obviously, with Linda McMahon, and who owned WWE, and Vince McMahon. Now they're divorced, I think, but I can't remember. But I think that, you know, between the two of them, they were all friends with Trump. And you know, much of Trump's style, by the way, others have pointed out that the style is much like that of a professional wrestler. And, of course, these are entertainers, and just – you know, I should mention, I have sort of a close relationship with WWE in the sense that when I worked at the Secretary of State's office, we worked very closely with them and with many wrestlers because I had a program called SmackDown Your Vote. So every election cycle, we would bring in multiple of these wrestlers, the famous ones, and promote youth voting. Mm. And I'll tell you, the wrestlers, I mean, there's a lot of spectacle there, and it's all strategic, and some people say, oh, it's fake. Well, the physicality is real, okay? They kind of know where the storyline is going, and part of building the storyline is that you have heroes and you have villains, and heroes are boring. Okay, villains are exciting, and you've seen in WWE where heroes will morph into villains because they need to become more exciting, and that's how it goes. And many of Trump's tactics have mirrored those of WWE. When he tacks on a nickname to someone, it's just like in the wrestling world.
It is, isn't it?
You crooked Hillary.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
You know. Whenever you see him, you know, put some kind of a designator, before the person's name. It's just like, you know, he's calling them the Undertaker or the Rock or whatever it might be. You know, and when he tweets out messages, he's speaking much like a WWE wrestler or performer does. And even if you just watched, even on election night, you know, there was this big buildup to Trump coming out to speak, and he milled around, you know, on the stage for a little while before he finally came up to the microphone. Very WWE like. So were many of his rallies, if you look at it. So it was at the convention, very WWE like, and how he's often in your face with his language and so on. Very, very much like WWE, and so I think he learned something from his days in World Wrestling Entertainment. There's a reason why World Wrestling Entertainment is popular, and it is hugely popular. So sometimes when I was working with WWE, they would invite me to the matches. I'll tell you, the face value of the tickets was just enormous. Mm. Thankfully, I didn't have to pay. I couldn't have, you know. And so hugely popular with a demographic that Trump needed to vote. And by using that style, I think that's kind of the target market he was appealing to. And it's made him successful.
Ken, if you don't let me talk again, I'm going to give you the claw.
Right.
I just find it interesting that CNN found this kid who made this joke video in 4 days, but they haven't found any proof of Russian conspiracy in over a year. Now, there is good journalism.
Well, yeah, no, and then now it's come out, of course, that they really don't think that there's anything there. It's just about driving ratings and trying to drum up controversy where there really isn't any.
Kent, we learn so much about you every time you come in. thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, see you next week. All right, it's 4 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll take a short break, and then when we come back, Bill English is in studio, which makes me 3 for 3 today, in-studio guests. Be back in a minute. All right, coming up next, Bill English is in studio, and we're going to talk about the 10 things that business owners do that drive their staff crazy. Be back in a minute. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.